Imagine this. You are in a relationship with someone, and let's just say you are a terrible boyfriend or husband, and you keep telling this poor fellow who was crazy enough to give you a chance that, you know what, if I leave you, you are all cooked. No one is ever going to be with you again. And in the middle of your rocky relationship of your back and forth, and you saying the exact same thing over and over again, you know, that I'm the only one for you, I'm the abusive though I may be, and you are an abusive jerk at this point. And you keep saying, you know what, if I leave you, you'll never find someone again. But the thing is, you keep coming back. And in the middle of you going back and forth in this relationship, she finds someone who she finds to be more attractive and treats her somewhat arguably better than you. Wouldn't you be angry too? Well, it seems to me like that's somewhat, that sums up the relationship between Venezuela and the US. That's someone that is arguably better at being a relationship partner with that's someone who is caught in something that can be described as an abusive relationship. That new someone is China. Good morning and welcome to Time Machine, where we use, where we mix humor and history to prove a point. Actually, it's just me proving my point in a very sarcastic way. That's the only thing I'm very good at. And the good thing is about me is when it comes to that, I don't have to struggle because it comes natural. If you think, if you want to find your job easy, just find one that is, that's in line with your natural traits. My natural trait in this case is sarcasm, and my line of work is talking about things in a sarcastic way, which, oh boy. So, good morning and welcome to Eagle FM. This is the Time Machine with Helmut, and I'm here until the hour of one. And boy, do I have one heck of a story to tell. Actually, a series of stories that all aligns to one thing. After going through all this, all that I have managed to go through, and don't worry, I have an hour and 20 minutes to share, 2 hours and 20 minutes to share all of it with you. And it's a stretch. It's a lot of it. So here's the thing. I have come to learn that, there are three main players in the world of politics. There are those that run for office, aka politicians. There are those who vote for those who run for office, aka voters. And then there are those that contribute to the campaign of those who run for office, so that those who run for office can have enough money to make flyers and flags and t-shirts and pay their electricity bills, so they can spend the whole night memorizing vocabulary for those poor people in the village. Now, these three have always been the same, it turns out, all throughout history. In the world of politics, even when we had monarchs before we switched, actually the French switched, and then we just tagged along to, switched from monarchy to democracy, the structure have always been the same. Albeit voters did not have a lot of say in monarchy, because you have to understand, rich people are smart. Can you imagine? For over 1,000 years, rich people always told poor people that the reason why you cannot occupy any political power, especially thereby royal family, is because, well, the God that created all of us equally favored me more than you, because, well, I was born in the right family. You, on the other hand, well, tough luck. You are not born in the right family. You don't have noble blood. You don't have royal blood. You don't have blue blood. Nonsense. It's all red. And the idiots also died. And every time they died, they were buried with gold. That was the most selfish. That's the most selfish thing in the history of aristocrats. There are a lot of people that suffered because they didn't have money. These morons buried a bunch of dead guys with money.
Well, you wanna guess who cried the most? The people that were left without money. Because a bunch of dead guys were being buried without money. Because rich people were very good at convincing poor people that, you know what? We are not like you. Believe me, our blood is blue. Well, no, not literally. But the thing is, we are holier than thou. Literally holier than thou. Now, it was all a power guarding technique. And this is a power guarding technique that, that rich people were willing to protect, even if they had to marry each other's aunties and uncles. Even if they had to marry their own, point of correction, their own aunties and uncles. And marry their own aunties and uncles, they did. Let me draw you one very, simple picture of, how power is, you know, how power has always been, for the most part, a family thing. You can start from Greek mythology. Here's the thing. When you're driving in Mandume and Mfayo Street, just after Vika Service Station, there are two buildings that are, that are on the south of Vika Service Station. You have one called Cosmos and you have another just across the road. I'm not sure what street. Is that across Seminary Yoma Drive? The one that's called Atlas. Now, for those of us that are Greek mythology lovers, we look at that and we see, we don't see buildings, no, we see stories. Now, here's the thing. What that Atlas guy was punished because during the Olympian War, I think, the Olympian War, what happened was Atlas, instead of fighting on the side of his brothers, Zeus, he decided to fight on the side of his father. So when the side of his father lost the war, his brothers decided to punish him by making him carry the heavens on his back.
It's Christmas.
If you've reached that stage in life where you are tired of everything, where each day is just routine, dah yammer me oh. No, seriously, I am genuinely sorry for you, cause you clearly haven't been polanified. Like boring day at the spun. Polanify your lunch hour with a delicious Polana curry. Chewing through yet another stale sandwich. Polanify your burger with a little mac and cheese. Tired of chewing the same shandy? Polanify your munchies with air-fried Polana pasta chips. Come on, life's too short for boring. Polanify every moment with Pasta Polana, a proud product of Namib Mills.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendike nawa nokumona oijamwiri nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. Where was I? Making a point that, using history to make a point that power have always been what? A family thing. And then you come to the, the Roman Empire guys, all those guys kicked it up a notch because, Claudius married his, niece
who then the niece then turned around and then poisoned the husband slash uncle, so that the stepson slash I don't know can take over power, which the crazy rascal took over power and then hired a bunch of assassins to kill the mother because she kept interfering in his ruling of the empire. You see, it's a whole family fiasco. And so was World War One, by the way. Nothing changed. When World War One started, the Tsar of Russia and the king of prince guy in England and the Kaiser of Germany, they were a bunch of cousins that disagreed on a bunch of things that contributed one way or another to World War One. It's a family. It has always been a family thing. So how about we voters at this point become smart enough to so that every time that a bunch of guys that are related start kicking the heck out of each other in the name of power, instead of sending our kids to go and fight their wars, how about we just tell them, you know, all those your kids that you have all sent to private schools? It's either you bring those ones to be at the front line with us, or we are not fighting in your war. Or we can just flat out tell them, you know what? This is a family thing. Actually, we choose to stay away, to stay out of it. I mean, we have our own family squabble. We don't invite you guys over. Actually, even if we did, you guys wouldn't show up. Because, well, to get to where my family fight is taking place, you'll need a Land Cruiser. And most of you like Vrupas. Because it's deep in the village. But you get the point. So, what's the point here? Today is about partly about Venezuela and the U.S. And mostly me pointing out, it's going to be me pointing out that nothing is new under the sun. And you have to understand, in politics, politics is about power. And to acquire and keep power, you have to lie a lot. It turns out in life, you have to lie. To get a job interview, you have to lie. To get laid, intimacy, you have to lie. You are the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. I will love you until all the seas will get dry. I've never seen an angel. Lie. But the point is, the alternative is not good either. In a job interview, if you tell the truth, you're not going to get the job. In an intimate relationship, tell the truth, you know, go get laid. My God, I hope she's not listening. Otherwise, when I walk out of this studio, I'm single. Fingers crossed. That doesn't happen. Bottom line is that, politicians lie, and we all do. Minus me, sweetheart. I never lie. Never lie. Not even one. No go lie now. Anyway. Let's dive right in now, shall we? Let's dive in slowly. Let's dive in head first. Now, it's important to understand that when it comes to this thing called power, it's not different. You also have to lie a lot. But to understand power, you have to understand a very important phrase, especially to understand political power. You have to understand a very important phrase, and you don't have to be a political analyst. Mm-mm. You just have to know how to read the colonial language called English. And that phrase is kingmakers. That phrase is kingmakers. Now, there was a gentleman in the olden days of England. That gentleman was known as Warwick. Now, what I forgot to look up is that whether the guy called Warwick is it Warwick or Warwick? Give me a break. Is the same guy that won university in the Great Britain. I'm not sure which part of England is named after.
That's one of those guys called a kingmaker. Now, a kingmaker, a kingmaker is a phrase that is given to someone with a, let me just go straight to the British themselves. I found a very awesome source. Yeah. Anyway, this is, oh dear. Yeah. This is the BBC. Yeah. I found the English source themselves. Now, the first person to be accorded the, to be given, you have to understand we are reading, you know, the colonial, colonizer's language from the source here. The first person to be given the term kingmaker in English as the latest was Richard Neville in the 16th Earl of Warwick. Go with that. Warwick was instrumental in the deposition of Henry the Sixth during the Wars of Roses, and his replacement was Edward the Fourth. But Warwick later turned against Edward and deposed him, restoring Henry. He was restoring Henry. Now, with all the English jargon aside, this is someone. Now, this Warwick guy was a guy that was not a king, but he managed to switch the kings and queens from the throne just like that. He just took, you know, he just took, first he took Henry, put him there, and was like, on second thought, you get out. Edward, take over. I was like, I don't see this working out. Come out. No sense. Second king, please. Now, what does it take to be a kingmaker? Well, this is where I have to simplify things now, because it was also sending my head spinning when I was going through this. At some point, you had monarchs, aka your kings and queens and royals, nobles, and blah, blah, blah. Now, we mostly have presidents and prime ministers, blah, blah, blah. So, the titles have changed. Titles have changed, for the most part. Unless you have countries that, like Eswatini and Morocco that still use constitutional monarchy. For those of us that use that are constitutional republics, we just use, you know, ministers, prime ministers, deputy. But the thing is, these are all power titles. They're all power titles. But you know, they say that the only thing that is permanent is change, and that is true. It turns out even in power. Well, what do you mean, man of God? Go deeper. Oh, yeah. Well, Standard Oil changed to ExxonMobil, and Anglo-Iranian changed from Anglo-Iranian to from Anglo-Persian to Anglo-Iranian to British Petroleum. They were like, you know what? The cover is blown. Everyone knows that we don't care about the Iranian anymore. We may as well just give ourselves the true name that we've always wanted to give ourselves, British Petroleum. Does Britain have petroleum though? No, it doesn't. They have, just throw British Petroleum in there. It has been British Petroleum the whole time. But just to make the Iranian more comfortable in a way that, you know what, we also care about you in our petroleum endeavors. They said Anglo for English and Iranian. They're Persian, and then they changed it from Persia to Iran, and then, well, you get the picture. So, why am I bringing up the kingmakers before going straight into this Venezuela discussion? It's because I'm one of those people that maintain politicians do not have the power we give them. We often attribute to them. No, they don't. Their campaign contributors, on the other hand, those guys have the power. In the US, they call them lobbyists, like the America-Israel committee. They call it AIPAC or something. Now, those guys, everyone knows that, lobbyists like AIPAC, those guys, Those guys decide what who takes over power and where and how. Now, those are the guys that if you were in medieval England, you'd call kingmakers. Because forget the president. Forget the president, forget the governor. No. Those guys decide who sits where, when and how. Why? What gives them that power? Oh, there's something it's something we all want. It's something we all want. Now, let's go to this, this Warwick guy. So we can answer that question. The power that allowed Warwick guy to keep switching royals from the throne. The power that allowed Warwick to do that was that, although the power that gave him, what gave him the power to do that, to topple two kings, came from his immense wealth. It has to do with money. Again, one thing that a lot of voters forget when it comes to political power is that political campaigns are required for you to reach the people that will vote for you. And campaign contributions and campaigns are not cheap. You are not going to drive, you need a lot of money to afford cars that you drive around to reach your voters. You need a lot of money to afford your dictionaries that will allow you to memorize all that English that you will be using to lie to your voters. You will need a lot of money to paint, to print all those flags, all those flyers, all those t-shirts. Now, all that money comes from where? It has to come from somewhere. If you have it, that's okay. If you don't have it, someone must give it. And it's more often in millions. And if it's coming in millions, no one is going to give you that money for free. And I repeat, no one. I don't even, it's like at this point, it's, like one of the biggest lie voters are ever told is that it's a campaign donation. Who the heck donates $1 million? It's not a donation. It's an investment. It's just that it's one very slick investment that instead of saying, you know what, I'll give you this as a loan, and then you'll give it back with 30% interest, you're just saying, I'll give you this so that when you get into office, I'm gonna get, my company is going to be getting all the public, all the tenders from the public sector. That's not a donation. That's a loan. A very, 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 a very smart loan. Now, why do I admire and respect campaign contributors, aka lobbyists? It's because they are not loyal to one political party. Campaign contributors have been known. This is not something new. Campaign contributors have been known to contribute to more than one political party. In other words, they are not putting all their eggs in one basket. They are just scattering the net far and wide so that they can catch as much fish. Replace the word fish with politicians, as possible. Now, when these politicians, it doesn't matter which political party wins the elections. They have their guy in office. That's why I respect campaign contributors. They think outside the box. And then you have these people called voters. Oh my God, some of them are amongst the dumbest people you'll meet. I was following the regional and local authority elections, right? And I came across one very smart youth. He's a gentleman who pointed out that he's more often referred to as he didn't use the exact word, but the word that he used describes him, at least according to those that judge him, as a political drifter. And he's like, what I just look at is, I look at the political party and then say, okay, I'm going to vote for that one. And come the next election cycle, if my interest is not aligning with what they are saying, more often in their manifesto, I'll vote for a different one. I'm like, now see, now that's the gentleman that understands, you know, that understands politics. That guy, that's your future campaign contributor. If that guy becomes rich, he's going to become a campaign contributor because he understands politics. It's not about a religion that I was born in this party, I will die in this party. Unless you are loaded, that's the dumbest thing you can say. If you are broke, if you are loaded, then, well, interest check. Because you know that switching, and I've come to realize that there are people that are in one political party and they have bread on their table, they throw that bread away to go to a different one, and then all of a sudden they are broke. I'm like, you idiot. You're supposed to stay because this thing is about interest, people. It's about interest. It's not rocket science. It's about interest. You don't have to be like wholly loyal. These are my points of view from my own observation and understanding of politics. Because campaign contributors are not loyal to one political party. They just scatter their money across different political parties. Whoever wins, they have their guy. And you do realize that, that actually makes a lot of sense, because to be a campaign contributor, you must be loaded. You must be very rich. For you to be rich, you must invest money in a lot of investment ventures. And more often, these investment guys, they don't just invest their money in one investment venture. They are into oil, they are into real estate, they are also into insurance, they are into finance. They are investing in all this finance, insurance, oil or extractive. They are investing in all, so that if one fails, they don't lose all their money. Again, so it doesn't surprise me to see that campaign contributors, even when it comes to politics, they don't put their money in one political party. In the same way that even when they are doing their economic investments, they don't invest all their money in one investment venture. So, makes a lot of sense to me. That brings us to why most voters are broke. Because even if we had money, we would invest it in one investment venture. In the very same way that we invest all our votes in one political party. So which party did you vote for? I was born and I will die in that party. Both regional, local authority, national assembly, presidential election, I voted for the same party. I'm like, yeah, right. That explains why you are broke. Look, if you do that and you are loaded, I understand, because you are protecting your interest. But if you are broke, I totally understand. And now that, ladies and gentlemen, in short, is the reason why you and I are broke. Because we like to put our eggs in one basket, both politically, when it comes to votes, and financially, when it comes to investments. Someone's salary is $10,000. They get that $10,000, and then someone approaches them and tells them, please invest all of it in my crypto investment account. And guess what the idiot does? All $10,000 of it in one investment. And then the whole thing, assuming they are, you know, best case scenario, the crypto investment goes belly up, and they lose all the $10,000. Worst case scenario, the crypto guy turns out to be a sham, and then they get scammed. So, sometimes we could learn a lot of things from campaign contributors. Campaign contributors in the political world, they don't give all their money to one political party. They give, for the most part, 90% of the time, 90 to 99 to 100% of campaign contributors give money to different political parties. Wow, I did not think of it that way. That's genius. Because they are deriving that wisdom. They are deriving that wisdom from their financial wisdom, from their economic investments. They don't just throw everything in one investment venture. Nope. They split it and they throw it in different investment ventures. So they take that mentality and no wonder. Then they apply it to politics. They come in politics, they find different political parties, they are like, okay, you know what, I have $1 million, split $500,000 to this political party and $500,000 to that political party. Whichever wins, I have my guy in the office. And then you have voters, hey, running and memorizing songs. Have you ever come across a bus full of campaign contributors singing political songs for one political party? Which would make sense because they have money. They can afford a bus. But they never do that. It's always poor people. It's always us, guys. This is embarrassing. It's always us. It's always us. And guess what? After memorizing songs and slogans, Aluta continua being chief amongst them, we're still broke. 30 plus years later, we never learn. We keep making the same mistake over and over again. And we wonder why we are poor. Welcome to the time machine if you take the story of yours truly, Warwick here, how do you think he managed to shuffle kings from the throne? It's because he sided with one, gave the money, and realized, nah, this guy's ideas are not aligning with my interest. Goodbye, king. And then decided to take his money and back up the opposition who was opposing the guy that was already on the throne, and managed to coup his behind out of the throne. Actually, I think that's where the CIA got the whole idea of coup d'etat. Works all the time. Actually, not all the time, as we are about to see. Quick break.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now, why did I start talking about kingmakers? It's because a lot of people keep annoying me when they are reporting on this whole US-Venezuela thing. We don't know what Donald Trump is thinking. No. Donald Trump is not thinking. No. Find out, every time, this is the world over. Especially the Western world and countries that have Western political influence, political ideology type of influence. More often, campaign contributor interest is doing the talking. The politician that you see in power, that guy is just acting in line with the interest of their campaign contributors. Which again, makes sense because those campaign contributors will be telling you that, if you want us to give you more of our money, come next election cycle so that you can keep flexing your imaginary power because we know we have the power. I mean, we are here telling you what to do. If you want us to give you more money to run around singing all those slogans, lying to those people that are broke and they are loyal to one party, unlike us, the smart people, you want to go out there and help us make more money. The more money we make, the happier we're going to be, the more money we are going to give you for your family to send your kids to private school, and the more money we are going to give you for your campaign, and everyone is happy. You scratch my back, I scratch yours. When it comes to voters, the deal is you scratch my back, I whip yours, because, well, politicians, voters scratch politicians' backs by voting for them. As soon as they get in power, those guys just take a whip and start whipping voters' backs like big time. Whip them like crazy. By, first of all, before elections, my office is open. We maintain an open door policy. You can just come in as you wish. You don't need, those are my people. Let them in. As soon as the guy is voted in, you need an appointment. You need an appointment. Actually, I'm busy. Now I have to go to I have a meeting in Walvis Bay. And from there, I have to go to the African Union Summit in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. That's what they tell. They never tell that to their campaign contributors. Why? Because they know that if they want to keep attending the African Union Summit in Ethiopia, they will have to listen to their campaign contributors, because if they don't, no one is going to contribute. Literally, it's in the name, people. No one is going to contribute to their campaign, and no one is going to take interest in them, especially after being a pain in the voters' behinds after during that tenure. No one is going to listen to them. Yeah, I love politics, but a lot of people don't understand it like that. So a lot of people think it's a religion. If you don't vote for that party, it's a sin. And you have parents, actually, I've come to learn that you have parents that will tell their kids, if you don't vote for our party that is bringing us food, no food for you. Which makes sense. I mean, it's the party that's putting food on you. Don't bite the finger that feeds you. Okay, that was this close to coming out in a very, 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 very adult things way. Let's pay the bills. Commercial break.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the U in UNAM is you.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
And welcome back. 16 past the hour of 8, and I'm here until 1. No. 10. Phew, thank heavens. Because I'm thinking today is Sunday. 11 to... Oh, mind the gap. Oh, yeah. No, don't worry. It's a... if you ask me, the difference between campaign contributors and voters is that campaign contributors are smart enough not to put all their eggs in one basket. Voters are too dumb. They keep putting all their votes in one party for 30 plus years, and they want change. Congratulations, guys.
Congratulations. This is just my own perspective. Fellow voters, I think that point of view on politics, if we want to master the art of voting, we have got to learn from campaign contributors. Let's look at how they do things. Don't contribute your 10 bucks and then starve. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is that campaign contributors don't put all their money in one political party. If they do that, they have to really do the math. And I'm yet to come across a bus full of campaign contributors singing party songs. I don't get it. But, well, freedom of voting, I guess. Now, let's look at Venezuela now, shall we? I want you to understand that it will take more than a PhD to convince me that Trump is making all the decisions about going to war with Venezuela single-handedly as the president, because he's not. Oh, what about his advisors? Oh, come on, advisors have salaries. Who is paying them? So, no one knows what Trump is thinking. Trump is not thinking. And don't get me wrong. Trump is not an idiot either. I know that's the common, that's the unanimous consensus across a lot of political analysts. Trump is just this deranged guy. No. If he is, he wouldn't be a billionaire. If he was, he wouldn't be a billionaire. One thing I like about Trump is that he's very good at acting like an idiot. He managed to fool a lot of people, including PhD political analyst holders, that he's an idiot. Now, that level of smartness is the same you see with campaign contributors. People, wake up! Trump is not an idiot. Trump is a genius. Look, the thing is, even I, using the word Trump, like, that's how good Trump is. That's how smart he is. That's how he managed to fool us. Even I, using the word Trump and Trump and genius in the same sentence, I wanna laugh! The biggest lie the devil ever told is that he doesn't exist. So, Trump understands that. I don't care what you believe. To the contrary, Trump is smart. Because for one, actually, if you're one of those people that believe that Trump is an idiot, you're one of those people that Trump managed to fool by making you believe he's an idiot. Even though we know you are broke, he's rich. Like, really? If Trump is an idiot, I really want to be an idiot. I don't want to be smart. If Trump is an idiot, I want to be an idiot. Because from the look of things, smart people are broke, idiots are rich, therefore, please make me one. Please. See? It's not. He's smart. But is he making all the decisions about going to war with Venezuela? No, he's not. Are his advisors here helping him? Yes, here and there. But who is really helping? That's where you may want to look at, who stands the most to win if Venezuela goes to war? Of course, the most obvious being the people that makes weapons, because those guys always win in case of war. But if Maduro gets out of power, and that lady with a very difficult name, the one who just won a Nobel Peace Prize, wins, and she becomes president. You know one thing that I like about her too? She's been very open about what she is going to do if she takes over office. One thing that took my attention that he kept hammering on was that we are going to privatize Venezuela's oil. I was like, she's going to privatize it. Now, if she privatizes it, you wanna guess who is going to be drilling it? American oil companies. You wanna guess who is going to get millions and millions in kickback? Hey. And you wanna guess who else? Donald Trump, that's for sure. Guys, always follow the money. This whole rhetoric of we don't know what Trump is thinking about. You are not a mind reader. You don't know what you don't even know what you are thinking about. she made it clear that the lady who wants to take over, who is religiously backed up by Western interest, Western politicians on the surface, but Western powers that be, and I mean, they are, you know, they are kissing that lady's behind so good, they gave her a Nobel Peace Prize. Nobel Peace Prize. The people that gave her Nobel Peace Prize are the ones that are hammering war drums with Venezuela. What type of peace are you talking about? I mean, but the Nobel Peace Prize at this point have lost its credibility because, Obama got a Nobel Peace Prize and then decided to bomb Libya to smithereens. Now, those of us that are political fanatics, we look at this and go like, yeah, you are not fooling me. First of all, it's understandable. Politics is a game of kissing behinds. It's not rocket science. And that lady is, one thing she pointed out, and she's very honest. I love her very much. She's very honest. She's not saying, I will care about the people of, no. She's talking about privatizing. Every time that you hear someone talking about privatizing, find out who is giving them money to say that. Because privatizing means private interest. Means more often the people, the public, which is the opposite of power, or private, is not prioritized in a way that they should be. And now Nicolas Maduro, the current president of Venezuela, has been called a lot of things, among which, the head of a narco terrorist organization, because is it, Soles something, you know, the, Cartel de los Soles, cartels, you know, it's Spanish for Cartel of the Suns, Suns as in Diua, the sun that you see in the sky, not the sun that you see with two legs and 32 teeth. And three hardwares. Let's not get into that. Is the Venezuelan president a drug dealer? Or is he enabling drug cartels in his country to, you know, to deal with drugs? Is he protecting them? Is Maduro using his military, his nation's military to protect drug cartels? Maybe yes, maybe no. Why am I saying that? Have you seen the movie Blood Diamonds? It's based on, what happens is that when you stifle a country's economy, what happens is the guy in power, to maintain his power, to maintain his country and his cojones, for the most part, he's going to do anything. He's going to sell anything. Thanks to the sanctions, that Zimbabwe is in, we got ourselves, actually, well, Jazeera gave us a documentary titled what? Gold Mafias. Like, I looked at that documentary and went like, I don't blame Zimbabwe for this one. Because what are they supposed to do? Sell that gold through international allowed channels? It would have been confiscated because Zimbabwe is under sanctions. So they had to sell it through other means. So because of sanctions, Zimbabwe was not left with a lot of options but to follow the illegal ways of doing things, which they did. I would have done the same thing. Anyone in their right mind would have done the exact same thing. Now, the alternative was, it's either to follow illegal channels of selling gold, or follow the, and make money, or follow the legal channels of selling gold, and risk that gold being confiscated, because it would have been. Welcome to the world of politics. It's a beautiful world to look at. Now, which is why, when someone, especially Western guys are saying, Nicolas Maduro is protecting drug dealers. I'm like, his country is under sanctions, and his actual economic blockade, whatever you may want to call it. What do you want him to do? By sanctioning his country, you pushed him right in the arms of drug dealers. As you can imagine, drug dealers approached him and told him, Oga President, you can see that you don't have a lot of legal economic options. But we have an offer for you. If you can protect our cargo, if you can use the army to protect our cargo, we'll be giving you this amount of money from the profit we're going to make. But here's the thing. Whether you protect our cargo or not, we're going to make money anyway. During COVID-19, especially towards the end of COVID-19, a lot of businesses across the planet have received a massive economic hit. So a lot of businesses were basically bleeding money and they were begging for the nearest benefactor. So in Italy, mobs did something very interesting where they would take a briefcase of money and, with a note, and then, they would accidentally on purpose, in quotation marks, accidentally on purpose, the Latin phrase is casu consulto, my favorite. They would walk in a restaurant and then leave it there so that the on purpose, at a strategic location so the owner of the business can find it. That note will say, here's the thing. We see that your business is struggling financial wise. Well, we have money. So, here's the money. Save your business and work with us. The Italian government had to warn business owners, guys, we know these are desperate times that are calling for desperate measures, but please do not take mob money. Because the conditions are going to change depending on the mood that the mob leader woke up into. If he got laid last night and he's happy, the conditions are going to be favorable. And one thing is that mob guys are very loyal to their wives. Or girlfriends, very loyal. Plus, if you're doing something illegal, you don't want to be a Casanova because that will be you telling, spilling your beans, or more like, you risk exposing, your business operations to different people. I totally understand why they're loyal. So if that Slay Queen now decided not to give the mob leader some action the previous night and he's angry, then he's going to take it out on your business. If you ask me, am I sure if the Venezuelan president is protecting drug dealers or he's a drug dealer himself? I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised to find out that he is one or protecting some. Why? Because the sanctions pushed him right in the arms of drug cartels. You can't blame him for that. You cannot blame him for that. At least I know I can't. Because, if I was in the position and you asked me why I was working with, and you found me working with drug dealers and you asked me why I was working with drug dealers, I'll tell you, well, if it wasn't for your economic embargo, I would be working with people that have a very good reputation. But thanks to your embargo, I don't have a lot of options. It's a beautiful world, but and down to my very that's a lot of information to cover in half in hour and a half, but let me see if I can shoehorn everything in there. Oh, tomorrow we can talk about Vikings and Christmas. Exciting times. President Donald Trump says it's a war on drugs. That's what he says. It's a war on drugs. Again, takes me back to the point I just made. If this war was engineered by the Americans themselves, they would not be fighting a war on drugs if they would not have put Venezuela in an economic situation where it has to work with drug dealers. At least those are the allegations being made, because the cartel that is more often sung by the mostly the Trump administration, known as the Cartel de los Soles, is not yet proven to exist. But then again, most cartels are not proven to exist, because if everyone knows about your cartel, then you are a terrible cartel leader. The Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro is a so-called narco terrorist who is flooding the U.S. with cocaine, mass violence, and sex trafficking. These are all accusations directed hardly towards the president of Venezuela, but there's one that piqued my interest there, close, just one, not many, just one. Mass violence, gun violence, check. America has that covered on their, you know, on their own. Cocaine, Mexico. Colombia is the biggest supplier of cocaine to the US market. So now you'd think they would be mad at Colombia too, but anyway, moving on. And sex trafficking. Aha. Now the, are you familiar with this guy called Jeffrey Epstein? Donald Trump ran on, during his campaign, one thing that he promised the American people is that if you vote for me, those Jeffrey Epstein files that recorded, very rich people and powerful people, doing despicable things to underaged girls for the most part, on a private island owned by a billionaire, I am going to reveal the list of the names of those people. That's what Donald Trump said in his campaign. And then he never revealed that list. He's yet to reveal that list. And we understand why. Because, well, the first thing that surfaced before he even ran for office was pictures of him and the guy that owned the island, actually the owner of the name of that list. So, if the goal here is, if the goal is to go into Venezuela and solve sex trafficking crimes, shouldn't we start with the Epstein list? The fact that they are not addressing the Epstein list, but they are quick to point fingers at Venezuela's, sex trafficking. Maybe sex trafficking is taking place in Venezuela. A drug-ridden country. That's not unheard of. But, are you familiar with that verse that says, you see, something tiny in your friend's eye that you are pointing at, but you have a pillar in yours? That's exactly what's going on here. Now, to convince me that you care about sex trafficking in Venezuela, you may want to start with the Jeffrey Epstein file at home. The fact that you are not addressing the Trump administration is not addressing the Jeffrey Epstein list at home tells me that they don't really care about sex trafficking, sex trafficking or whatever types of crime that's taking place in South America or anywhere else. It's about the oil, baby, about the oil. That's it. Now, is this really about Venezuela? Or I have another sneaky suspicion. Is this really about Venezuela or something called the Monroe Doctrine? Now, what is the Monroe Doctrine? Oh, yeah. Boy, oh, boy. On the other side of the break. It has to do with the fifth U.S. president, James Monroe. That guy became president at the time when European countries, Spain, Portugal, Great Britain, they were losing their stronghold on South America, on the Americas as a colony. Because, well, their power, does rise and decline. So President Monroe came to office and said, Europeans, here's the deal. First of all, get the heck out of this, North and South America. Second, I want you to get the heck out of here and never come back again because, well, I don't want any one of you or this is a very important part, or any major power operating in the Western Hemisphere. This is my playground. This is my turf. The thing is, now, that doctrine is about 200 years now. The thing is, you remember the the Cuban missiles and the Bay of Pigs, 1960s. That's because, the Soviet Union at the time was becoming very cozy with Cuba. And Cuba is in the Western Hemisphere. That means the Soviet Union was, trying to step on, it was actually stepping on that doctrine, and the Americans did not like that. JFK at the time, very reasonable relative to a lot of American presidents. My favorites being Abraham Lincoln, Andrew Jackson, questionable reputations, themselves. I mean, they're politicians, duh. So, Cuban missiles and the Bay of Pigs. Monroe Doctrine was violated by the Soviet Union. So that pissed the Americans off. These are the same Americans, by the way, that have now 800 plus known military bases across the planet. Because I'm saying known because they have something known as black sites. This way, your Secret Service now torture people without worrying, having to worry about facing backlash for human rights violations, blah blah blah. Like Abu Ghraib in the Middle East and the Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. Guantanamo Bay also comes in because of that. More on that whole Monroe Doctrine. Now, the question then when you look at that is, you begin to ask that, is this really about drugs or is about Venezuela? Or there is more to it about Venezuela's newfound friends. One of them being a major power, or a very rising one, really fast at that, China. China has established itself. China has a significant presence right now in South America. In a way that when you talk about it in the context of the Monroe Doctrine, you kind of get the picture of why the Americans are not very happy with Venezuela. Because you have to understand that, China is part of BRICS. Brazil is the B in BRICS. Brazil is in South America. South America is in Western Hemisphere. That means, again, Monroe Doctrine. You gotta love history. Now, Monroe Doctrine. The question we have to address here is that, is this about sex trafficking? Is it about drug cartels? Is it about violence in any parts of South America, especially Venezuela? Or does it have to do with political doctrines, especially in this case called Monroe Doctrine? Now, we're going to use China as an example a lot because of its significant presence in South America and how that may be attributed to trembling over the Monroe Doctrine. What is the Monroe Doctrine? The Monroe Doctrine that you speak of, man of Eagle FM. Well, in 1823, yes, you did not hear that. You did not mishear me. You heard me right. 1823, like 2023, but in the 1800. Like 1993, but in the 1800. Yeah, no, like 1923, but in the 1800. Let me draw you a picture. 1823 to 1923, that's 100 years. 1923 to 2023, that's 200 years. Yeah. Now, in 1823, president number five, I just decided, did that on purpose. The fifth president of the US was a guy called James Monroe. And he's the one that passed a rule called, they called it a doctrine. It's a rule. A rule called the Monroe Doctrine. You know, if you are going to come up with something, you may as well, just name it after yourself. After all, Constantine founded a city and then he called it Constantinopolis, the polis part meaning city, where we get the word metropolis. The city of Constantinopolis. I founded that. Now, James Monroe here also founded the Monroe Doctrine and then named it after himself. Called it the Monroe Doctrine, which pointed out to European powers that their looting days were over. That, you know what? Your colonial times are over. Yeah, that their looting days were over and that the US was now assuming that role of the world's biggest bully and looter. Thief. Same WhatsApp group. Now, the role previously held by the Portuguese, the one of looting, and the Spanish, again, the one of looting, and the British, I don't have to explain that part. Then the US told the European guys that, you know what, at this point, the contenders in terms of global stealing were Europeans. You know, the guys that were given the papal authority to civilize, they were the biggest thieves. Actually, they are. It's just that it's a little hidden. And it's just that Asians and Africans are slowly participating in the stealing. Quick break. Especially Africans. But Africans are mis-stealing because these guys are stealing from their people. You guys, you are doing it wrong. You're supposed to go out there, steal, and then bring home. Not the other way around. Because you have Africans stealing from home and then taking the money to Switzerland. You are reversing the situation.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Kileli ngusala abutokwa kwa sichaba sana Namibia sesipila mamu wasizo. Ye kita muso ya abutokwa kuzwele lalikola njimo vundui mezi nipukelezo ya muvu. Muteleze kaswanelo. Nikuikabe alingusala abutokwa le ni mabasi Amina. Vau mpila mbapa nivona mane chwalo ni mizuare. Muikambuse kwa kezo ya kule kisa nikuleka muvu wasizo. Livaka kila kuri. Muvu wa maino mana Namibia ulo wilo kimubuso. Mea kusikalo melwa ni hainyani kule kiswa manzila ifika mbaifi. Kuitenga mwaka ulo ya tekiso ya muvu uo, kuungi waku baka ulo ya kulova mulao. Muvu wa sichava wa maino kakuyaka mulao wa buketa lizuwa wa siri musa 2002. Uhanisa kezo ye chwalo. Zemu kwa nakutalimana nizona hamu itenga mwatekiso isi kamulao kizela telela. Kamulao, lifosi likuwa nakulengi wa mastoki sikapa kutomela tifo ya mashirini. Kustatarisa sizuale sasichava. Kulekisa kapa kuleka muvu wa sizo kukuwa nakutisa lifapani imizeko mahala sichava. Zemu toba kuziva kizemu. Muvu wa maino kiwaluna kaofela. Mimutu ni mutu utoka kufumana kavelo ya yona. Kubihali tava za muvu zelo wa mulao. Haiva mule muhileli tava zesika nitifazwa za tekiso ya muvu. Mususuweza ni kuelezwa kubihatava ye chwalo kwa kute Amina ya sizo. Kachengo, kaka ike mezi kaka vona za muvu wa sizo. Kapa ofisi ya likolo yalivuka ofini Mina. Lususuweza hape kukona kusebeza hamuho. Kungele la chwalo ni kukona kubukeleza muvu wa luna. Nilimbuleza nyambe. Kakweza chwalo kwekeza kwa bukamuso. Mubuso hauna kubaka ulo ya sinyehelo ya muvu zeti swakiri tekiso za muvu kwa mukunda. Muhupule, muvu wa sichava wa maino wa kataleha. Lubu keleze kaswanelo. Luitumezi kwa salisano ya mina. Lingusa la wireless ile. Litusizwe katuso ya mashiringi kuzuelela kwa mubusu wa naha Namibia ni na Germany. Mwaka ulo ya panka ya Germany Development Bank. Kutualitava kabutungi za butokwa. Mukwane kuzuela kwa office ya libuka ofini mina. Kapa kuikopanya ni mubuleli waliko ola njimo hundui mezi ni pukelezo ya muvu. Fanombolo 061-2087-604. Lipuzo kwa ufela ze munani zona. Mulilu mele kumoka meli walikolo.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Where was I? How Africans are missing this whole looting thing. Guys, in the world of geopolitics, everyone with a title honorable or mister to his name is a glorified thief. Now, what they do is, you have the Asians do this. Have you seen the Japanese? Are you kidding? Just read the history of Japan. And, all these guys in office, especially there by central government, they steal. The difference is, the difference between Africans and other parts of the world is that, in other parts of the world, the leaders steal 30% from their people. And 70% from the, from outside their country. Well, the thing about Africans is that, they steal 70% from their people, actually 100% from their people, and then, well, take it outside the country. Like, really, guys? And then they keep preaching developmental objective. What developmental objective? You have all the money in Switzerland, you moron. Now, how are supposed to develop? The stealing must be there, but you shouldn't steal all of it at home. Jeez. Take Iceland, Semheri, for example. They didn't want to steal in Iceland. They came to steal here. And then they took to Iceland. And then you have my Fisher Road boys. They stole everything here and took it to Japan. Oh, come on, guys. Let's be serious about these things. You think they're listening? I don't think it's funny for them anymore. I mean, this is the seventh Christmas behind. It's tomorrow. This is the seventh Christmas behind us. Hey, seventh or the eighth? Who is counting? I don't care. I wasn't part of the club that chopped the money. These guys did not even throw an iPhone with two SIM cards my way. Aye. Now, Venezuela, Monroe Doctrine. So, the long story short. James Monroe guy, James Monroe guy, 1823, comes up with a doctrine called Monroe Doctrine, of course named it after himself. The doctrine basically said that, told the European powers that their stealing days are over and that the US is now taking over the role of the biggest thief on the planet. You know, before that it was the British. I mean, the British were even worse. The British were stealing far worse than the US is stealing. The British were stealing everything, including people. Jeez, British. Actually, they still have a lot of evidence they stole in the British Museum. See your life. So the doctrine told made it categorically clear, in the words of some Namibian parliamentarians, the doctrine was to make it categorically clear to Europeans, who were the main contenders at the time when it comes to global stealing of resources, that their stealing days are over, especially in the Western Hemisphere. Now that was the American playground for them to basically steal, which they did. And they have been doing for the past 200 plus years after that doctrine was founded. So, the doctrine made it clear. No Europeans or any major power. Now, the thing is, the time of this doctrine and its, and the time that when it was amended is that in, was amended in 1904, by President Theodore Roosevelt, China was not a competitor anymore. No one even cared about China as a competitor, especially in the Western Hemisphere. Plus, the Chinese like their space. They really like their space, which is why they only visited us once with Zheng He, and they were like, you know what, this is too expensive. We'll just go home and take care of our people. Well, it turns out the Chinese have always been taking care of their people. Because they terminated the whole Zheng He expeditions because it was too expensive for their empire. They decided, you know what, we'd rather take care of our people than spend money in exploration. And then there were the British. You know what, we'll just ship our people and then take them to a prison colony somewhere. We'll call it Australia. And then we'll just hoard all the resources for ourselves. I mean, we're already rich, but who's counting? Talk about selfishness, but anyway. So, almost jumped to the military confrontation of it. The thing is that this doctrine doesn't seem to be doctrining anymore, because China seems to have made its way to the Western Hemisphere, and I'm guessing one of the reasons is that the US is all over East China Sea. Yeah. This is all over East China Sea, and China's like, well, if you can come in my hemisphere, I can come in yours. I mean, after all, tit for tat. Now, but look, I totally understand why the Americans don't find this funny, because the Chinese must have their own Mao Zedong doctrine if they don't want the Americans in their hemisphere, because the Americans have the Monroe Doctrine that says no major power here. And China is a very threatening one, technologically, economically, politically, and et cetera, et cetera. Although, to be fair, the Chinese have the Mao Zedong Doctrine, but it's not called that, and it's widely different from the Monroe Doctrine in terms of what it does or the purpose it serves. The Mao Zedong is more internal. Monroe Doctrine is more very intrusive in other countries. If you look up "niet" means "niet," that was the Russians telling the Americans, and also Western Europe, to stop expanding towards Russia because of Russia's own Monroe Doctrine. One thing I come to learn is that big powers, they are scared of each other. They don't like coming in close proximity with each other because they see each other as more of a threat than they do smaller countries, which is, it's not rocket science really. Now, when you look at it, what do I mean by this Monroe Doctrine is not doctrining anymore? Well, because China is the biggest trading partner of Brazil and Chile and Peru and Argentina, and all these countries are in South America, and they are all in Western Hemisphere, and China is a rising global power. So that means, according to the Monroe Doctrine, China shouldn't be doing that. And China's Belt and Road Initiative has also expanded to South America. Oh, threat. And what is China doing in South America? Well, what China has always been known for: development, infrastructure development. What the heck? Like, look, this is where I feel like China is missing the point here. China is supposed to be friends with the US. If you guys had one job. All you had to do was learn how to topple governments and learn how to give loans instead of building infrastructure, and you'd get the picture. The problem with you guys is you don't topple governments, and when you show up, you invest in infrastructure development. That's not how you do it. No wonder the Americans don't like you. Like, you have to, China, come on. well, you are the math guys. You are supposed to have figured this part out. Toppling governments and stealing resources. Not befriending the governments and investing. Oh, come on! You're missing the picture here. See, when you look at the list that I just shared with you, Brazil, Mexico's trading partner is the U.S. Now, here's the thing. Earlier this year, Helmut and Dwight on Home Run talked about the case of corn. The Mexicans decided that, you know what, this is a U.S. America. This is a U.S. Mexico case that the U.S. won. The case involved a GMO, genetically modified corn, that was dominating the Mexican market. And their staple food is something called tortillas. Picture it as tacos. Yeah, that's what's used to basically make tacos. That's one of their staple food, and it's made from corn. The thing is, because it's the most consumed food in Mexico. The thing is, because it's most consumed and it's made from GMOs, more often coming from the U.S., it's causing a lot of health problems for the, for the Mexican, which is very bad for any economy, because that also impacts your workforce. And your Ministry of Health bills goes through the roof. No country likes that. Well, the Mexican complained. They were like, you know what? If you are going to give us corn, please give us one that's not genetically modified, because we don't want to put the health of our people at risk. Well, the U.S. did not listen to that. And they were involved in a legal dispute. The U.S. won. The Mexican lost. And then that means the Mexicans are on a disadvantaged side of that health conundrum, actually. No, health disaster. It's a health disaster. Friendships like this is the reason why the U.S. is losing friends. 2011, Yanis Varoufakis, for about 6 months, becomes the finance minister of Greece and finds that one of their major ports, the equivalent of what we have Valvis Bay here, is being operated by a Chinese company, and that, the company is highly, highly dependent on subcontracting, which, the finance minister himself, and he's an economist, and he finds out that, this subcontracting is a little too much. And also, this deal is somewhat lopsided. It's not benefiting the American, it's not benefiting the, the Greeks, the Greek people. So, this first order of business, Yanis Varoufakis hops on a plane, flies to China, sits with the representative of the companies that was running the port, and renegotiates the deal. According to him, to his surprise, the guy said, okay, we can renegotiate the whole deal. And he was like, wow, did not see that one coming. Now, the Mexicans wanted to renegotiate the deal to be given corn, but not GMO corn. And they, you know what they were told? You signed the deal already. Therefore, we're just going to give it to you. GMO or not. It's that type of relationship. That type of relationship is making the U.S. lose friends. The Yanis Varoufakis example type of relationship is making China make a lot of friends. More of it. It's just a minute past the hour of 9, so I have 59 minutes. And 4 more pages. Okay. May have overdone on this one. Try to scale it down more. Now, let's sift through it now, shall we? At this point, if you do not get the picture by looking at the list of South American countries that have a significant trade volume with China compared to the US. If you don't see the picture, I think you need glasses at this point. Unless you have glasses already, in this case, then you need, the John chapter 9 miracle where Jesus heals the blind guy to start seeing again. Now, look, it's a Christian joke. It's a festive season, people. Learn to laugh. Now, the point is, if you look across South America, you see that a lot of countries have become somewhat very cozy with China. And it's clear that China has been slowly marching across, you know, marching over, more like trembling over that Monroe Doctrine. And looking at the, you know, two cases that I've just used to explain the type of relationship that a lot of countries are having, the U.S. is military power. One former Marine guy who was in the Andrew Feinstein documentary. He's an American. He's an American former service member. Pointed out that military powers tend to lose their, you know, when a country is small. It must be very exquisite at diplomacy. That's negotiating. If you're a small country, you really have to be very good at diplomacy. But if you're a big country, you don't have to negotiate with anyone because you know, if you're a big country, you have a strong military, most likely. That's how you become big. If you're a big country and you have a strong military, you just bulldoze your way in any situation. And the U.S. have been bulldozing their way through, you know, through deals for a very long time. The U.S. have been negotiating like Tura boys. Hear me in one hand, and if you don't hear me, exile your stick in one hand. So now that you have their main competitor arising, in this case China, they have lost the art of diplomacy, because in case of their case with Mexico, all they had to do was listen to the Mexico side of the story and say, okay, you know what, you are the customer, we are selling you stuff, we'll just switch. We'll give you what you want. But no. They said, well, you signed a deal. We are going to give you what we want you to have. Now, at this point, picture this. If China came to Mexico with a deal, providing the Mexicans with non-GMO corn, what do you think the Mexicans are going to do? They are going to sign that deal. But they won't, because, well, ask Panama. Well, the Panama Canal was, given back to the original owners, and then, they became cozy with the Chinese, and the Americans were like, you know what? When we gave you back this canal, we wanted you to operate it, but now it's being dominated by Chinese. Now we're just going to take it back. And then politically, the war went very political, really fast. No surprises there. So, Yanis Varoufakis went to renegotiate a deal with the Chinese. The Chinese said yes. The Mexicans went to renegotiate a deal with the Americans. The Americans said no. Now you understand why. Big countries lose diplomacy. And, if China becomes, China becomes the next superpower, in the next 100 years, they are going to lose the art of diplomacy, and their chances are very high they are going to become worldwide the U.S. is today, most likely. It's just a change in administration does that. The bulldozing type of way, though, is a very, goes back to the founding of the U.S. I mean, the Monroe Doctrine. The Monroe Doctrine was put together in 1823 when the U.S. was on president number 5. So they've always been you have to understand, they got their playbook from the British. They had the wrong mentor, very wrong mentor. So glad that the British did not inspire China, because they'll be here collecting slaves. Monroe Doctrine seems, China seems to be running around the Monroe Doctrine. Now, what does this have to do with Venezuela? Military intervention. The military intervention part. So, you see, The Monroe Doctrine was given a full military green light in 1904 by President Theodore Roosevelt, who amended the doctrine in a way that made the U.S. The police of the world, especially South America, that every time that, now this was in 1904, 1960s, Cuban missiles and the Bay of Pigs. And now you have this Nikita Khrushchev promising to deliver the Tsar bomber to the West, and JFK also with a, because the U.S. at this point already had its nukes, right? Yeah, it already had its nukes. Now, they were basically, they all realized that, that's not going to work out very well. So they decided to, to call it a Cold War in a sense that it, because it was fought during winter. And some of it, some battles were fought during the fridge. In the fridge. That's why it's called a Cold War. My biggest fear is there are students that may listen and not get that joke and then start using that as an answer in their history books. Jesus. The world we live in. Now, in 1904, President Theodore Roosevelt amended the Monroe Doctrine in a way that made the U.S. police of the world, especially South America, by giving it the power to intervene militarily in Latin American countries. And the U.S. said, oh, challenge accepted. In other words, military intervention was, direct military intervention was given a green light in 1904. And the U.S. went to work. In the 20th century alone, it has sent armed forces to Peru, Nicaragua, Mexico, Honduras, Guatemala, occupied parts of Haiti, Cuba, Dominican Republic, Panama, Colombia, and it helped overthrow governments in Argentina, Chile, El Salvador, Bolivia, Brazil. I'm telling you, it was the 21st century, especially in South America. Oh, the U.S. was busy. It was busy. Now, look at all this military intervention. And calculate the amount of money being made in weapon spending. And you understand why peace is not very, peace is very nice, people. But if you are a weapons manufacturer, peace makes you broke. So you always want people fighting. So if you have a president that gives you a blank check to intervene militarily in a bunch of countries, you will give them a very good $1 million handshake. Multi-million dollar handshake. Now, the point is, every time, South American country tried to be cozy with a major power, Uncle Sam, disapproved through sanctions, blockades, Cuba, coups through, to straight up invasion to protect its interests, which is mostly weapons of mass destruction, its interest has always been weapons of mass destruction, that the Iraqis had back in 2003. The weapons of mass destruction that is commonly known as oil. Which brings us to Venezuela. Now, Venezuela is a country with the most proven largest reserves of weapons of mass destruction. Larger than the ones of Saudi Arabia, larger than the ones that we have just discovered here at the shore of, of Namibia. We also have our own weapons of mass destruction. Kinda shy. It's our first time. It's our first weapons of mass destruction. We never had weapons of mass destruction. Actually, we had it. We just didn't discover it. And Angola has its own weapons of mass destruction. But Venezuela has the biggest reserves of weapons of mass destruction. Now, you totally understand why Venezuela becoming cozy with China, with its massive reserves of weapons of mass destruction, why that's a bad idea. That's a terrible idea. It's worth noting that before their relationship went sour, the U.S. and Venezuela were homies, and U.S. companies' access to Venezuelan weapons of mass destruction fields, they had U.S. private companies like ExxonMobil, they had a blank check, they had free access to Venezuela's massive weapons of mass destruction reserves. Now, that is until in 1999 when Hugo Chavez seized power and yeah, and started defining governance in less the Western Europe and American way and more the Iranian, Chinese, and the Russian way. Now, this is not just governance, but also economic doctrines in line with that of Iran, Russia, and China. And the first thing he did was, was keeping Venezuela's massive weapons of mass destruction under state control. Now, that nationalization of those weapons of mass destruction pissed off a lot of guys that had free access to those wells that had massive weapons, of mass destruction. Now, actually, in 2006, following the U.S. invasion of Iraq, because of weapons of mass destruction in 2003, Hugo Chavez went on to call George W. Bush, and I quote, "What's that? You are a donkey, Mr. Bush. You are a donkey, Mr. Danger." Why he called him Mr. Danger, I have no idea. Those are words of Hugo Chavez. Now, the thing is, those colorful description of Mr. Bush Jr. came from Hugo Chavez's sneaky suspicion that the U.S. had tried to topple him from an attempted coup in 2002. That's before the invasion of Iraq in 2003. And an alleged attempted assassination in 2005 to straight up accusing Hugo Chavez also accused the use of using U.S. aid to fund opposition parties. Ebana, politics is delicious. Say 14 minutes into the hour of 9, the time machine. We use history to make a point and throw in a little bit of comedy in there, because, well, I can't do something straight. I find it depressing if I do something with a straight face. I don't laugh in the bedroom, if that's what you're asking. Don't make jokes there either. That's not how I become single.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Where were we? Accusations, false or may not be false accusations, by the late president of Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, about accusing the U.S. of using U.S. aid to fund opposition parties in his country. Not that this culminated in that Juan Guaido guy. His allegations. So that's when a lot of people went like, maybe homeboy had a point, because where did this guy pop up? And the lady that they want to install in after, you know, getting rid of, you know, after getting rid of Maduro is very pro-privatization. That means they want to reverse the change that was made by the change, the nationalization of the massive weapons of destruction of Venezuela's massive weapons of destruction, wells, to, you know, privatization is the reverse of nationalization. Private companies from the U.S. enjoyed access to those wells of weapons of mass destruction until it was nationalized. Then they lost that access. So this lady promises to privatize. That means she wants to give them that access back. Just listening to that statement alone, who do you think is funding this whole thing? Follow the money. Follow the money. But the Nobel Peace Prize was an interesting touch, by the way. An interesting touch. Very interesting touch. For those of you with money, if this war kicks off, you're about to go for a World Cup in a country that's at war. Congratulations. Let's just hope it doesn't, because the economic conscious. Now, whatever happened to Hugo Chavez? Well, back in 2013, God or whoever, answered the prayers of the Americans because back in 2013, Hugo Chavez dies and, you can imagine Americans went, yes, finally, man, he's dead. We'll just go out there and take that oil. It turns out Hugo Chavez is not a fool. He made sure that he had the right hand men. Like literally, the right-hand man. Not the wrong one that Thomas Sankara had, the one that turned around to backstab him. Not the one that Patrice Lumumba had, the one that also that turned around and then backstabbed him. No, Hugo Chavez had the right-hand man. His deputy. You want to guess his name? Nicolas Maduro, the current president of Venezuela, who carried the legacy of his late predecessor. And carry it on to the point where he's willing to go to war to keep carrying it on. Man, that level of leadership. I'm telling you, because look, if Maduro was an African deputy, Maduro, Hugo Chavez would have been sold big time. Would have been sold big time. African leaders, I hope you can learn a thing or two. Especially if they're by deputies, prime minister, not to mention any names. So, with a little bit of Mother Nature's luck, on the US side, Chavez died in 2013, I say a little bit of luck because Chavez had thought things through and he was immediately succeeded by his deputy, Nicolas Maduro, who now serves as president of Venezuela. And the US went like, oh man, oh hell no, not these guys again. Because as soon as Maduro went, you can imagine after Hugo Chavez died and Maduro took over, you can imagine a bunch of private companies, went to American politicians, gave them money and gave them a bunch of private jets to fly quickly, if they were in Namibia, quickly go to Venezuela and find out if that guy is also pro-nationalization. And the politicians got there and came back with a report to report to their campaign contributors. Well, that guy. Oh no, we gave him a lot of money, but he refused. He's still making some nonsense, points like, hey, I'm just here to take care of people of Venezuela using their resources. What kind of nonsense is that? The guy does not want to, to have so much money that he can go to Malaysia for a headache. That guy does not see the bigger picture at all. So, after that report was brought back, the campaign contributors were like, okay, all you just have to go to do is just go there and give this guy a sanction. The politicians were like, why don't you just go there and do it yourself? No, we can't do that. We gave you money so you can do it on our behalf, so that all the blame can go for you, can come for you, not us. You are the cushion. You are the punching bag. We want to be, want to be safe here behind Unless you don't want our money anymore, because in that case, then in the next election cycle, we'll give our money to that political party, and then that guy will be in office, and you want to bet he's going to take our money? And at this point, the politicians went, okay, fine, you make a good point. We'll just go out there. And then they came out and said, you know what? We are going to sanction Venezuela. So, and sanction they did. So, the US decided to punish Venezuela and by imposing heavy sanctions on them, and that phrase that I think every US uses a lot, and at this point it's been overused. Why? Under the guise of what? National security. No, it's about oil. It has always been about the the nationalization of oil. This is in 2013. Again, let's go back to what did BlackRock say back in 2011? Nationalization of resources, especially in the mining sector, is counter foreign investment. In other words, keep it private so we can make a bunch of rich of shareholders in Switzerland that are already filthy rich, richer than the people. See, that works. This whole nationalization, before you start saying, yeah, let's nationalize our resources. I hope you are listening. I hope you are listening to this. Eagle FM, huye more?
Oh, Morokeni.
Morokeni?
Gapi.
Na wako ngapi?
Wako makara kwa Irugani.
Ya, kwa Irugani tu akara.
Ulika kwa akara. You know, the only problem is that when I listen, I understand.
Yeah.
And I also now can also respond, but I don't have to be responding by getting down some wine.
Yeah.
Beating, how are you? Going to Longa, how are things? You know, we used to speak that. We used to call it Spanakalo.
Oh, really?
Which is Wambo and Kavango mixed, kind of.
Like a cocktail.
Maybe because it's Spanakalo. What do you know? You have heard about it. Maybe you know.
I've heard of it.
Mm-hmm. It was the Kavango, Wambo language, Kavango. They could be, maybe they also some, you know, this language from Zambezi or maybe Lodi, something like that. But they would speak it to our village.
Yeah.
When we are speaking it, and we want so much to know, and the people, when they are listening, it's like they don't understand. So otherwise, how's the morning?
I know, it's all good here. All good here.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes, this is now, because I just became, I was listening to you in the morning.
Yeah.
But I did not know that you are still there. Now you were talking about, you know, this funding, money, you know, political party and things like that.
Yeah.
So I want to find out. So this political party that are getting funding from the government. I know those who are doing a good job, maybe creating also employment, facilitating some of those things, and also really promoting democratic values.
Yeah.
So at least that's what we expect, because it's our money, mostly. It's our money. And we don't want it to be just spent in arguing and fighting and all these other things.
Yeah.
Because it's the person, they say when the people are, when the elephants are fighting, I always hear the grass is the one that is suffering. Now I'm sometimes worried and find more just to learn, and you reminded me. This money now that these people are just quarreling about. Because sometimes there's no service delivery, you know, you understand? So there's no understanding, there's no cohesion, you understand? So they fight, and then the service delivery is also hampered, you know? So now, how do we really take them to account? Especially when they are getting this fund, and also they are not really channeling this fund. I mean that really educating people, not only during the political rally, no. I'm talking about also creating employment. Well, there are those who really create employment. And if you can do some statistics, I'm sure you will find out that this particular party, ABC, has employed these people and is also facilitating these things. even in terms of their manifestation, manifesto.
Yeah.
So also to state there that, yes, people are really doing something for the community. So it's not a handout that I'm talking about. Eh? Talking about facilitating the process of development, especially social development. And also to make sure that, yes, they are really accountable to some of this money that they have. Because those who are fighting too much, eh? Fighting, and when you are there as a mayor or say whoever, that position that you have occupied, and you are there fighting, don't, and you are also giving money for the campaign, isn't it?
Yeah.
They do get money from the government, National Treasury.
Like political parties?
Yes.
Yeah, those ones with seats in parliament, yeah, there.
Well, with seats in parliament.
Yeah.
Even those who are not having seats in parliament because they are also gathering some money.
Yeah.
Money does not come through, as long as that money does not come through this, what do you call it, scrupulous kind of way.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about those ones that don't have seats in parliament. But one that I know for sure is that political parties that have seats in parliament, they get money, and they get the more seats. It's actually dependent on the seats that they have. The more seats they have, the more money they get. So if you have one seat, don't complain about not being given a lot of money. You know, campaign more and win more.
That means it's a way of encouraging them to win more,
uh-huh,
or to do better. Because now even those who are not getting, they haven't seat in parliament, I'm sure they can also find some methods and way of mobilizing financial resources and personnel.
You
understand? So at least to do something. So I think the agenda of development in conclusion now is about, you know, that the Kajero Kampanyera was here this morning. I think you are the one who followed him. So then he, you know, I was also worried because I've heard a lot of time people are talking about this green hydrogen is a German project.
Yeah.
So today, Kanzeo, I don't know, maybe that program of today that I listened, we really demystify some of those perceptions. That, you know, this is our project. This is our project. And it's an industrial project. And a lot of things that happen. And I think the owner, Museko also came in. And so some of these projects, I've heard many political parties writing and saying, no, green project, the green hydrogen project is a fake project. It does not going to improve, it will not employ people, and people will not add value to their economic growth. I've had them read those articles. So what are they doing these things? Are they now going to just allow people to live in poverty and not facilitating some kind of employment creation in those area, in that area? Because construction, we have heard, is booming. The iron, what? The green iron or something like that. So those are some of the things. So thank you very much, my son.
All right.
For helping us to understand a lot of issues. But the one for yesterday, so you were mentioning about how they are the security cluster.
Yeah.
The security cluster is very important.
And
I think it's also important that, yes, we understand there are a lot of people who are, you know, they are hounds. Like you said, you don't have a security guard, you don't have a lawyer, you don't have what. So I know they know that they have the criminals and others. They have this kind of information. They are also planning. Because when you get in the context of South Africa, you can see the sophistication of this. But there is something that I think I'm just concerned.
Yeah.
It's like maybe the military personnel.
Yeah.
They don't usually leave their strategy, military strategy, and all this strategy that we are employing now into our day-to-day work.
Yeah.
So they don't normally leave it. But if we are now to say, fine, it's true, your house doesn't have fence, maybe it's also a caution for people to have some dogs or their yard to have fences and things like that. But I just feel that these are some of the things that like in the military, you might not reveal much. Of course, it can come in the comedian and all these other things.
Yeah.
But I just think that strategy, or it's like, might be also reserved a bit. But of course, let be made aware of issues like that.
All right.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and I have 27 minutes before I call it a day for today. So I'm back to where we started. Okay, now. It's one of my favorite songs titled Where We Started. And then, you know, when I said to back to where we started, I just want to, you know, start playing DJ. And then I remember that it's not Sunday. So, sanctions. Look, when you have a friend and you keep mistreating them, don't be surprised when they start getting themselves new friends. Because with the part of the U.S., Hugo Chavez's death, and then the takeover of Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, and the U.S. now putting heavy sanction. You know, putting heavy sanctions on Venezuela. And that, if you ask me, may have been one heck of a mistake. And you can't tell me that a bunch of advisors did not see that if you put sanctions on a country, anyone that have seen the documentary, The Gold Mafia, knows that if you put sanctions on a country, they are going to sell anything. They are going to sell anything to make money, to keep themselves afloat. So that's why I pointed out in the beginning that, I wouldn't be surprised if the allegations, because at this point they're just allegations and have been for a while, if the allegations of the Venezuelan president being a drug dealer himself, or him using his nation's, his country's army to protect drug dealers, if those allegations are true, that wouldn't shock me, because, what do you expect a country under heavy sanctions to do? Just reverse this situation. Say the U.S. was sanctioned heavily by Venezuela, but they have a bunch of drug cartels. They'd be doing the exact same thing. I'm telling you, without blinking, they would be transporting drugs or protecting. You're talking about guys that transported and sold people, so I wouldn't be surprised. So, Jeffrey Epstein, but don't forget that part. So, the thing is, even in the middle of their whole, you know, even the, in the middle of their, of those, sanctions, whenever the U.S. needed sanctions, it quietly gave license to American companies like Chevron, allowing them to bypass those sanctions. You know, like, the same way that they've given a lot of, aviation parts makers that need titanium, they have given them sanctions to buy, you know, aerospace grade titanium from VSMP Avisma, which is a Russian company. Last time I checked, Russia is under heavy sanction. Oh, really? In other words, when it suits us, we'll give you a waiver, but when it does not interest us, you are sanctioned. That's how the world of geopolitics works, people. It's about how much muscles you have. International law, it's actually my favorite branch of law. I love public international law.
Except now that I've been in this seat for a while, I'm looking at it and go like, do I need a different major? Because, this one, the people that you'll be dealing with adults that are just behaving very erratically. But it's because of money, people. Because of money. Yeah. Oh, man. So, back in 2001, China needed large amounts of crude oil. This is where the cozy relationship now comes in that factors into the whole Monroe Doctrine alleged trembling, because I'm just, that's just the conclusion I have reached at least. Back in 2001, China needed large amounts of crude oil to fuel its modernizing projects. And China has been on a construction spree, and they still are very good at it, to this day. So Hugo Chavez needed a buyer who wasn't threatening to impose sanctions every time that they wanted to renegotiate the deal. So that year, Venezuela became the first Hispanic country to sign major trade deals with China. 2001. So a year later, the U.S. tried to overthrow Chavez in a coup that failed. If you failed at something in this 2025 that you try to accomplish, don't worry. It's part of life. Even coups fail. You know, it's, keep trying until you succeed. And if you don't succeed in a coup, you just threaten to invade them, which is what's going on right now. So the coups have failed several times now, an invasion follow. At least we know how it at least we know the order. When a president nationalizes the resources of this of that country, the first thing that comes is a smear campaign, which is what you saw. Wait, I don't have a poster. I'm gonna murder someone from production. So a smear campaign. First of all, tell the people of that country that the person they voted for is a dictator. If that doesn't work, try to kill them. If it doesn't work, when you are trying all these things, make sure that, you have someone in close proximity to that person, secretly, to take over power, in case you succeed with a coup. And if a coup doesn't fail, assassination fail, then you just say that, they are selling drugs, and they are trafficking people, sex trafficking and everything, and you have to go there and liberate them, you have to send in the army. So, the order is, step one, tell them not to nationalize. If they are stubborn enough to nationalize, you destroy their reputation. If they destroy their reputation, if no one is falling for your lies of destroying their reputation, you send in a bunch of guys to try and kill them. If that one fails, you find a bunch of bad things that's happening in their country. Every country has a bunch of bad things happening in them. So that one will not be hard to find. So once you find that, you now go with, they need liberating. Nah, we know the order. So, at least I know that if I find, in Namibia right now, say take 5-10 years down the line, a president takes over who nationalizes, our oil, at least I'll be having my checklist. I'm like, okay, step one, ruin the reputation. So, when I'll read an article about my president being some kind of, some kind of a drug dealer, I'll be like, oh, it has started. And then the next thing, next newspaper, a president of Namibia survives an attempted assassination. I'll be like, yep, we are on list number two. Check. And then after that, we go, the president of Namibia is participating. He's now leading a Tura gang or Tura boy or Tura girl himself. Nah, that doesn't sound right. Tura boy, there's no gender equality in Tura guys. You guys can't run that fast. Those guys strike like lightning and disappear like smoke. Ask iPhone owners that have, that decided to chill in Evelyn Street, especially this time of the year. But anyway, I'll just be ticking it off. I'm like, okay, attempted assassination, check, that didn't work. Blackmail, check, that didn't work. Military intervention, so I can start packing my bags on time. So, where were we? A year later, the U.S. tried to overthrow Venezuela. Hugo Chavez, in a coup that failed. So in 2005, where was I? 2001, China. 2001, yeah. A year later, the U.S. tried to overthrow Chavez in a coup that failed. So,
Again, like I told you, if you failed at something that you wanted to do this year, don't worry. Even coups fail. Failure is part of life, is part of learning. So worry not. So the U.S. increasingly saw Venezuela as part of a socialist government with strong ties to China and Russia. Throw Iran in that bucket because that trio is more often put governance-wise in the same basket. Therefore, it's a threat to the interest in the region, and the U.S. tried to in many ways isolate Venezuela, isolate economically, mostly economically, because that's what hurts the most. To isolate Venezuela. But the irony is that the more they isolated Venezuela, the more they made room for China to basically step in. A cool stepdad to a kid of a father that went full Usain Bolt after failing to use a condom. Sorry, it's a little too early for that. Well, here's the thing. Venezuela had weapons of mass destruction, aka oil. And they wanted someone to buy these weapons of mass destruction without bulldozing decisions into how the weapons of mass destruction must be bought or sold. And China was presenting itself as that friend. You know, the friend who is willing to negotiate on equal footing. And on one side, the friend who was willing to negotiate on very unequal footing, in other words, I'm gonna need your oil or else. China was saying, can I have your oil? I'm willing to buy. The US was like, I'm also willing to buy, but at my price. And these are the conditions. And if you don't follow this, well, I mean, I have an army at home. I can just bring in and, liberate your people from you. I'll do that after calling you a dictator, of course. And, you know the drill. In 1953, Mohammed Mossadegh, 1973, Salvador Allende, you being from South America. I mean, I went through that list. I don't want to go through it again because I only have 16 minutes. Yeah. So, well, China is said to have given Venezuela more than $60 billion in state loans for housing projects and helped Venezuela build railways and ports, the usual China thing that they have been doing here also. They just, invest in, the African Union headquarters in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. It was funded for and built by the Chinese and given as a gift to a lot of people that were stealing some of the money actually they would have stolen the money if it was given to them to build the project. It would be in Switzerland by now. Which is a very painful admission to make as an African, a very embarrassing one. So, China, this is the part, like I pointed out earlier, China is very good at missing the point. You are not supposed to build. You are supposed to topple leaders and build less, but steal more. Not the other way around. China, you are failing the West here. But then again, you are in the East, so. What's the... So, at this point, you don't have to be a rocket scientist actually to figure out that in the middle of that isolation with the currency in free fall, because that's what happened, because in the middle of that economic isolation, sanctions, the currency went in free fall because they didn't have a lot of trade to back it up with. So China at this point became a lifesaver for Venezuela. Now, Venezuela became its entry point into Latin America and a key transport hub for its Belt and Road Initiative. If you ask me, if I was China, I would be thanking the Americans for making it very easy for me to tremble over the Monroe Doctrine. First of all the economic sanctions made Venezuela desperate. That desperation drove Venezuela straight into the arms of the Chinese. That large ecumenical hug between the Venezuelans and the Chinese gave the Chinese a doorway into creating even more relationships
with South American countries. And, well, what did China do in Venezuela? Investment packages for infrastructure development. Now, what do you think the neighbors of Venezuela thought when they saw China giving Venezuela that infrastructure development packages? Like, I also want me some of that. I also want me some of that. Next thing you know, Monroe Doctrine out through the window. So, here's the thing. Sometimes when you point fingers in one direction, actually sometimes, one finger in one direction, the rest points at you. So, I think in a way, the U.S. contributed to its own, to the trembling of its own doctrine by making people desperate. But I totally understand this because for a very long time, take for example, for a very long time that China did not have the economic and military power that it has now, Venezuela would be on their knees by now because they would not have had anyone to actually come in and play the role that the U.S. usually plays. You know, buying their stuff, not bulldozing their government decisions through. But, so, what you see here is something very simple. When you isolate someone and they have options, they're going to take those options, even if they would not have otherwise taken them, if you were nice to them. It's the same, it's the same for China's entry into South America, at least to the degree that it has now. And also, well, it's the same for all the allegations of Nicolas Maduro being a gang, you know, a drug dealer or a drug protector, drug cartel protector. All those things, they just played a role. That economic desperation did that. Somewhat contributed to that, or largely contributed to that. Yeah. So, take care of your gelu, take care of your menu, because if you don't take care of them, someone out there will give them the thingy. I have a brilliant idea of how to end my show for today, of why you should not, you should be very nice to your friends, colleagues, especially thereby husband, wife, boyfriend. Be very nice, oh, because if you don't, yeah, they're going to disappear you. But quick break.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utete opoye ekukulile Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa Ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali Ile kumberewa, bura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and a thousand apologies for that extended break. It's gonna be worth it. Now, why should you be, why should you treat your friends nice? Why should you treat your wife, your girlfriend nice? Because, well, there's always someone out there, especially there's this species of human being known as bestie. Watch out for those ones. Those guys are going to swoop in and take over. Why? It's because, there's a very wonderful wedding ceremony wisdom that came out of Uganda about a few days ago. I found that on social media, and I'm going to share it with you. And please share it with those ones that got married, because this wisdom is very important, very important. Please take a listen. The theme of the video is the thingy. We're in Africa. We don't talk about sexual intercourse just anyhow. No, no. You have to give it a code name. This pastor call it the thingy. Now that the foundation has been laid, please take a listen.
Don't refuse to give your wife a thingy. And let your wife also not refuse to give you a thingy. Unless you are in prayers and fasting.
Yeah, the thingy. Very important. If you just got married. The thingy. Give your wife the thingy. Pastor, Oya, go on. Tell these newlyweds. Give them marriage wisdom.
And you fast.
You want to guess where it's coming from? You remember that video of Simon Kankwanjala? Why are you gay? We bring you this morning one of the gay rights activists, Pepe Julian Onzima. Good morning. From good morning, just straight to why are you gay? That same country that gave us, colleagues. Money will come. The economy is now on the same country that gave us, it's the same country that gave us, who killed Captain Alex. That movie that was started with $800 or is that $8,000 something like that, Namibian. Who does a movie of that? But Uganda nailed it. That's the same country that gave us this.
Put it to one another. That's when you should stop giving one another thingies. Don't you know if you refuse to give your husband a thingy? You will bring temptation in the house. Your wife will be going to look for someone who will give her a thingy. And your husband will also be going outside to look for someone who will be giving him a thingy.
That's wisdom for those of you that just got married. Please remember to give each other the thingy. And you just know that if you are not giving each other the thingy, you are going to give each other temptation. You are going to invite temptation in your marriage. Then the husband is going to go to other women to get the thingy, or the babysitter will be giving him the thingy, and the wife will also go maybe to, you know, the colleague is at work will give the thingy, or the driver will be giving her the thingy. Just remember to give each other thingy, see. That's why you should be nice to your friends. Because, you can easily push each other, to get a thingy, see, away from other people when you should be giving each other the thingy, see.
I like African parents. They are very responsible. They are creative at picking words that are very clear and clear in a sense of for all ages. You know, things are very important in relationships. So, wives, husbands, don't forget to give each other things. I love Uganda. I love you, Africa, but I love Uganda. I love Namibia more. So, where are we? It's simple, ladies and gentlemen. If the allegations against the South Korean, the North Korean, Venezuelan president are true, he was pushed in that situation big time. Now, it's not like the US is new at drugs. The biggest drug dealers are in Western countries. 20 years of occupation in Afghanistan to protect what? Opium. 100 years of humiliation China went through. It was to protect what? Opium trades, opium market. Because China was a lucrative opium market for the British and the French. And all of a sudden they care about where drugs end up, really? I'm not saying drugs should even be traded. I'm just saying the excuse being used, just say you want oil. But to be fair, Trump pointed out, just made that clear. That's one thing I like about Trump. He made that clear that, we're just on this for the oil. It's not rocket science. The rest of, look what y'all are coming up with. That's yours. Because, for us, we're just there for the oil. What did Trump say, about oil? Easy. We could have gotten that oil. Actually, they got an oil tanker for it. They got an oil tanker in. And they also, they are going to sell the seized oil. Yeah. Talk about not selling, stealing goods. It's the pirates of the Caribbean. Guys, this is why I'm a firm believer that, the only thing that gives a country a real independence, is building an army. Because if you don't have an army, you are cooked. Because what's happening there, the US will never do that to China. They will never do that to Russia. Why? What does China and Russia have in common? One, they both have nukes. One, they both have the military technology to basically, well, stand up for themselves. So, is it about drugs? No, it's not. Is it about human trafficking? No, it's not. No. Is it about gun violence? That's a joke. If you are not an American. If you're an American, that's not a joke. 10 o'clock on the dot, that brings moi to the end of my show for today. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. This is yours truly, Helmut, with the Time Machine, where we use history and a little bit of humor to prove a point that is unfortunate enough for us. It's part of what we live with. But just couples, newlyweds, don't worry. Don't forget that it's important to give each other thingy, see? Don't let your men go out there and get the thingy. Give your men the thingy. And also give your women the thingy. Give each other thingy, see? Man, that man is a genius. Until tomorrow, where we talk about Christmas rituals, and Norway, but specifically the Vikings. The mighty, mighty, mighty Vikings. Until tomorrow. A lot of activities during the festive season and a lot of consequences of those activities. So look both sides of the road before you cross. Don't drink and drive. Don't drive and drink. same WhatsApp group. And we're in a rainy season, and we are blessed with very wonderful rains. So you don't know your car. When you, every time that you see a stream of water, you don't know your car, you're going to park on the side, and you just, you know, you spoil yourself with music. You know, it's better to, what do I always say? It's better to arrive late than to arrive being described as the late. You're welcome.